So, Van, I think everyone who saw your speech at Everest Nation was stirred once again by, you know, what a powerful speaker you are, but also, you know, kind of the sort of vision you have. And I wondered if what you've heard from folks after giving that speech in terms of the energy for your plan to rebuild the dream.
Well, we've been really blown away by the incredibly positive response and the really broad range of people who have a positive response. I think we've been able to tap into something, which is, you know, just what feels to be, you know, not an accusation, but a fact that there are forces out there trying to kill the American dream,
mm-hmm.
and that we have not been able to speak back with a loud enough voice that many of the things that made America an exceptional country, like, you know, good, strong public education and, you know, a safety net and good American jobs with benefits, are things we should be, things that are worth fighting for. I think people do feel that there's one tiny, at the end of the day, group of people with either a lot of money or a lot of anger that have been able to hijack the discussion about America's future, and that there are more creative solutions for America than just cut everything. And so, to the extent that the idea of rebuilding the American dream becomes a common banner under which a lot of positive movements can march, I think it's going to be a very helpful intervention in American life.
Yeah, I was impressed particularly by the way I think working people are getting the picture and coming into the fold. Are you seeing that as well?
Very, very much. I mean, I think this is one of those ideas, kind of like the green jobs idea, that just makes sense to people when they hear it, and it doesn't necessarily break down on the old traditional lines. For instance, small business people feel that they are under siege and aren't able to make their dreams come true in America anymore because the banks aren't helpful and the big global corporations set the rules to advantage themselves against America's small businesses. So they need to be a part of the American Dream movement. I think a lot of rural America feels like the banks are screwing them over.
Yep.
And I think you've got a lot of rural America that would like to see America's government be a better partner to ordinary folks than what we've seen this past, 18 months. And I also think that the there are people of faith who don't like the way that some of the biblical values and religious values of concern for the poor and solidarity with our sisters and brothers in times of crisis are just being ignored.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people feel that, you know, to put Ayn Rand or Ayn Rand up, who's, you know, anti-religious, anti-Christian, as some sort of a goddess for this libertarian movement is very offensive.
Yeah.
And so I think you're going to find a lot of people of faith who are going to want to find a home in this movement. And there'll be other groups. And I think that eventually just a good common sense and decency of the American people will begin to shine through. America's smarter and wiser than the approach that has infested and infected Washington, D.C. The idea that you can just cut everything in America and not have a balanced approach doesn't really well with ordinary Americans. I think ordinary Americans would say, if they had a family crisis,
yeah,
they wouldn't say, "Well, let's just starve Grandma," as a great solution. I think they'd say, "We'll cut back on some non-essential expenses, but we're also going to increase revenues." You know, let Junior go out the paper route,
right?
And increase revenues. That's how Americans solve financial crises every day. But America's government is pursuing a completely alien strategy.
Right.
And I don't think that strategy can stand. The other thing I'll say is that when you have someone like Grover Norquist, who has gone around and got a very large number of Republican candidates to swear him an oath of what they will and they won't do.
Right.
I think that does not sit well with the American people, because the only oath that our elected officials are supposed to take is one to uphold the Constitution.
Right.
And to serve the American people. And so I think that as we begin to move and grow this movement, you're going to see a lot of unlikely people coming in, mainly because what is being proposed in Washington, D.C. is so preposterous that it will create a movement, it will give us the opportunity to create a movement that is very broad and very powerful. And we hope to just build it quickly enough before our opponents just do so much damage to our country that we have to spend years recovering.
Yeah, well, we're already doing that to some extent right now. I was struck by what you were saying about, our values and our Christian values, and not just our Christian values, but our values as progressives. And I often notice that, liberals and progressives aren't allowed to have any values in the sort of beltway narrative that emerges in terms of our positions and what we fight for, and I wonder how we change that narrative.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of talk about narrative. I mean, it's almost become a little buzz phrase. I just think we need to speak from our hearts.
Right.
And here's the thing. Most people can't track all these policy debates and what's happening in the subcommittees of the subcommittees and all these blogs and all this stuff, because people got stuff to do. And the only thing people want to know is who do you stand for? Who are you fighting for and why?
Right.
And I think we need to be very clear that we're fighting for the vast, vast majority of middle class and working Americans and folks who'd like to be middle class and working Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason we're doing it is for the same reason our grandparents and our parents fought to make America better. It's because we love this country. We think it's an exceptional, beautiful, unbelievable experiment in diversity and democracy and opportunity. And we don't think it should be the best of our values should be shot in the head by people who just don't want to pay their taxes. I mean, that's
right. That, right.
It's just, and
want to destroy unions, and
Well, I mean, it's the end of the day. There is a contradiction between the levels and kinds of corporate and personal greed that's being promoted and any kind of deep patriotism.
Right.
And that is where we have to take our stand.
Right.
We are for free markets. We are for entrepreneurship. We are for business, especially small business, women-owned business, green business, patriotic businesses that hire Americans and pay their taxes here.
Mm-hmm.
But we're opposed to the worst elements of business, which don't want to give anything back to the country that makes their profitability possible. And we'll fight those guys all day long, because it's wrong to do well in America, and they refuse to do well by America. And that's what we're seeing from the worst of the business community.
Right.
And yet they are promoting you know, this very unpatriotic agenda where you take from America but give nothing back, except, you know, crappy wages and zero taxes. And they're calling that the height of patriotism.
Yeah, well,
and we've got to stand up to that.
Well, and they're spending a lot of money to promote that too. You know, they have their media machine already in place, and they're able to propagandize largely at will. And we know that, you know, a lot of what they do, what they're going to do this time around, just as they've done it in the past, is they're going to lie and they're going to smear us. You know, any ideas? I mean, you've had to deal with that pretty up close and personal.
Sure.
Any ideas how we deal with that?
Well, I think we have to have some courage.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things, I mean, I went through it, and you would like to be, I mean, I think part of the reason that progressives and liberals are so vulnerable psychologically and emotionally to these smear campaigns is because we have some unacknowledged desire to be liked and seen as good people.
Right.
And so that becomes a soft underbelly when you're dealing with people who don't care about the facts and who are willing to say anything. And so there's a crucible that every movement has to go through where it comes under heavy, unfair attack and criticism.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing and able to push back as best you can, but also not to get absorbed into the food fight.
Right.
In other words, I think there are three mistakes you can make. One is say, well, it's just too tough out there. It's a contact sport. I don't like it. I'm just not going to do anything. Let the bad guys win without a fight.
Right.
Because they've so discouraged and demoralized people that people will just, they'll just defeat themselves and won't even try to make the country better.
Right.
That's the main mistake that people make. And I think you break through that just by having examples of people who, you know, keep fighting on. The second thing that people do is they get so kind of above the fray that they just don't respond to nonsense and to foolishness. And I've been accused of having made that mistake, but just kind of ignoring these people for too long, and people accuse John Kerry of making that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's another mistake that you can make, is just ignore these people too long.
Mm-hmm.
and not be forceful about at least setting the record straight and demanding some fairness.
You were trying to turn the other cheek in a lot of ways, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, eventually I figured out, you know, the human body only has four cheeks on it, and I turned all four, ran out. So, you know, at a certain point, you know, enough.
Yeah.
But you know, the other mistake that you can, and you know, Shirley Sherrod, to her credit, she just went and sued right away.
Yep.
But yeah, different people take different approaches. The third mistake that people can make is to get so consumed with the lies and the nonsense from the other side that all they want to do is to quote unquote fight back, etc.
Yep.
Well, that's also a trap because, you know, we're trying to run a race here, and, you know, we're trying to get from the country from A to B. Well, these, you know, there are people who then will, from the sidelines, start throwing banana peels and, you know, bricks,
mm-hmm,
and marbles on the pavement. And if all we do is stop and get into a fist fight with them, we still don't win our race.
Yep.
And so
we don't inspire anybody with our vision.
Well, we don't inspire anybody with our business, but we also don't achieve our own goals.
Right,
our goal is
right.
Not just to be a fight back movement against the right wing.
Yeah.
Or against the worst of the right wing.
Yeah.
Our goal is to actually get people jobs and housing and clean air and clean water and good education. That's our job.
Yep.
And so then the fact that the other side will do anything to keep us from succeeding means we have to have a response, but you can also be consumed by that response, and that's also, to your point, not inspiring.
Yep.
And also it's another way to fail. As they move,
mm-hmm,
these people are, you know, they'll be happy to trade punches with you until the last dog barks. Because while you're dealing, as long as you're more concerned about who you're fighting against, you can sometimes forget about who you're fighting for.
Yeah,
and that is a big problem. So this is a tough thing. But I'll tell you this: what makes all that stuff go into a different kind of perspective is just having the courage of our convictions. The Tea Party, when they first came out, they got a pretty tough welcome from America. They were called tea baggers, which was kind of a dirty joke for people who knew what that was.
Yep.
They were called racists. Some of them were, a lot of them weren't. They were called crazy,
extreme,
and they were laughed at
for
a long time. But they had the courage of their convictions. They said, "We don't care if you agree with us or not. We're gonna stand here and keep fighting." Now, obviously, Fox News and Koch brothers and everybody else amplified what they were willing to say and do, and gave them a sense of comfort. But you still can't take away from the fact that 24 months ago, it still was very unpopular to challenge Barack Obama, and it was very unpopular to challenge Keynesianism as the basic approach that America's government in a crisis like this should be at least the spender and the lender of last resort, if not the actual employer of last resort.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we were 24 months ago, that this was going to be like the new deal. And you had Roosevelt on the cover of national magazines, and the whole thing, that was 24 months ago. And Barack Obama had come in on 55% of the vote, a complete, the first time you had somebody with that level of a majority of a couple of generations, or at least a generation, 60 votes in the Senate, and Nancy Pelosi running the House. And that is a lot to go up against.
Yep.
And they went up against it, and they weathered the criticisms, and eventually they were able to change the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
This movement, if it gets any traction or momentum at all, will be absolutely attacked, slandered, smeared. I'll be attacked, slandered, and smeared.
Yep.
Anybody close to it will be attacked, slandered, and smeared. And who cares? Who cares?
Yeah.
Because while all that stuff is going on cable TV, most of the people are watching the other 105 channels.
Yeah.
And they don't have any hope, any champion, any policy that makes any sense, any movement to join. And the people watching the other 105 channels, those are the people that we have to continue to worry about. They will. A lot of this stuff that happens, they just want to see. I mean, you know, this is a democracy. The other side will use the tools of democracy and in an unprincipled way often, in a dishonest way often, but it's still the tools of democracy to try to shape public opinion. And for them, a big part of their playbook is, since they can't actually win the debate, that what they want to do to America is going to make the middle class come back. It's going to get your kid any kind of tuition or opportunity to go to school. They just want to attack and demonize the individuals who are standing up for the people. They've done this for decades and centuries. It's not anything new. They called Dr. King a communist. They called Nelson Mandela a communist and a terrorist.
Yep.
That's just what they do. And what we have to say is, who cares? You know, I've got two little boys. I tell them, sticks and stones will break my bones. Words may hurt you, but they ain't going to kill you. And it's much more important for us to put the country first. And I think when ordinary people see that the things that they say about us don't stop us from doing what we have to do for the country, we'll have more respect.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of people who are liberals and progressives. They want the country to change, but they don't want to suffer.
Yeah.
they rather blog and complain about what Barack Obama's not doing or President Obama's not doing, rather than get out there and take some of those brickbats themselves.
Yep.
And I think that there's a silent and silenced majority of Americans that believe we can do better as a country than we're doing, that don't think this extreme, one-sided, lopsided, cut-everything approach is going to work for America, and will rally to the cause of a new way forward, especially when they see the leaders come under attack, but not respond with hatred, not respond with eye for an eye, but at the same time be tough-minded enough to tell the truth about what has to happen in America, and be tough-minded in the way that Bobby Kennedy was to stand up to some of the some of the worst elements of American society and say, sure, this is not your country to ruin.
I was struck by that point in your speech, and it was something that I had a lot of people mention to me too, that they were struck by, was the point where you said, you know, people sit there and wait for the president to do this. Sometimes we need to lead the president.
For sure.
You know, and that's and I think that's very appealing to a lot of people.
But you know, I said that back in 2008 before we won.
Of course. Yes.
I haven't changed at all in that regard.
Right.
If you look at my Netroots Nation speech in 2008, you can play that right before you play the one in 2011. And I'm saying the same thing, obviously a little bit more anger toward our friends at Fox News. But otherwise, I mean, I told people in Netroots Nation 2008, I said, you think that Barack Obama is going to save you, you are going to have to save Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Because what is going to be unleashed when this guy gets elected is going to be so ferocious. Your main concern should not be about electing him. Right now, you should be worrying about reelecting him.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're going to see. I mean, I said that in 2008. In August, before the vote, and so I've always felt that it was up to the, you know, democracy is not the work of a few people in a tiny town called Washington D.C. Democracy is the work of the whole of the American people.
Yeah,
and frankly, I hope it comes across, even disagree with some of our opponents. I have great respect for the Tea Party. I have great respect for our friends in the Republican Party. And America's eagle needs a left wing and a right wing to fly. My problem isn't that the right wing has been working too hard. It's that the left wing hasn't been working hard enough.
Yep.
And so I don't expect the right wing to lay down for us. And I don't expect the president to do the work of a nation.
Yep.
I think that the best idea is America will solve, America's democracy will solve these problems when all of the American people participate. Because I think when all the people participate, or at least a lot more than are participating right now, some of the ideas that the deficit, people who call it this deficit mania, have, some of those ideas are good ideas. But it's just too much. And other ideas have to come forward now. So that's where I think the American Dream movement is at its strongest, when we are respectful of the president, but we don't expect for him to do the work of a nation. When we're respectful of our Tea Party opponents, but we also are clear-eyed and tough-minded, that a balanced approach is going to work a lot better for our country, and are willing to stand up for that. And we also respect ourselves enough to know that we, as I said in the speech, we never went around talking about, yes, he can. At our height, when things were going well, we were saying, yes, we can.
Yep.
And that's not a departure. That's just actually us living up to our own promise to ourselves that we were going to build a movement.
You've said it so well again. Thanks so much, Ben. Appreciate it.
Yeah.